Seekers of authenticity and discuss everything between heaven, hell, and beyond. For much more, visit our website redeyescreations.com. And when you want to sign up for a membership and listen to all programs in their entirety, check out redeyesmembers.com. We have full RSS feeds with all programs from 2006 to 2012. You can subscribe with iTunes or your podcast app if you're on an Android or an iPhone, iPad. We have many different ways you can listen to the program, internal players to stream or download. If you want to listen in later, we try to make it as easy and convenient as possible for you. So we hope you enjoy it. Today we're talking with Rick Simpson from PhoenixTears.ca. He has been providing people with instructions on how to make hemp oil medicines for about 8 years. The results, Rick claims, has been nothing short of amazing. The research, backed by hundreds of other studies done worldwide, has proven properly made hemp medicine provides relief or cures of many diseases, even cancer. Simpson has provided hemp medicine to hundreds of people with various medical conditions, and the results speak for themselves. Throughout man's history, hemp has always been known as the most medicinal plant in the world. And today we're going to discuss Rick's story, the use of hemp oil as medicine, how it works, and the reasons why the pharmaceutical establishment refuses to acknowledge the powerful effects and benefits of tetrahydrocannabinol, also known as THC. Stay with us for much more. Right, welcome to Red Ice Radio, Rick Simpson. Good to talk to you finally. I've been aware of your work for some time now, and we wanted to have done this as well for some time, so it's good to finally have you with us. Thank you for coming on, Rick.
Well, it's great to be with you, brother. And it's like I say, it's all about spreading the message. So I'm happy to be here.
Really good. Now, what is there a simple way you can kind of summarize your backstory a little bit? I know you've run through that in every interview that you've done in the past, of course, but I don't want to leave anybody behind. Maybe you can just give us a little bit of that and share with us whatever you feel is pertinent to kind of understand where you're coming from pertaining the subject that we're going to discuss here today, Rick.
Okay, I'll just go over it as briefly as possible. In 1972, my 25-year-old cousin died at the age of 25 from cancer. And I witnessed the whole thing. I was about 23 years old myself at the time. And it was a horrible experience. And then about 3 years later, I worked at a hospital in Spring Hill, All Saints Hospital. And about 3 years later, I was leaving work one day. And I just got in my car and turned on the radio, and I heard this report. And at the time, I didn't know exactly where the report come from, but it was from the Medical School of Virginia study in the U.S. that was staged around 1974, 1975. And the announcer stated that THC, the active ingredient in marijuana, has been found to kill cancer cells. So, I mean, the way it was presented, like the announcer was laughing like a fool. Of course, every time somebody mentions the word marijuana, they seem compelled to make a joke of it for some reason.
Yeah.
But I never heard nothing more about, you know, THC killing cancer, so I thought at the time it was just a prank. But still, the information I'd heard, it lodged in my memory bank. And many years later, in 1997, I suffered a severe head injury at work. And it left me with a condition called post-concussion syndrome. My head rings 24 hours a day, and believe me, that's a hard thing to live with.
Yeah.
So I went down the chemical highway. You know, they started putting all the pills to me that they possibly could. And about a year after I was injured, I watched an episode of The Nature of Things with Dr. David Suzuki, and it was called Reefer Madness 2. And it was all about people smoking marijuana for their medical conditions. And it showed that, you know, many people were having very dramatic results. So I went out and I got some pot and I smoked it, and sure enough, it worked better than anything the medical system would give me, or was giving me. And so right after that, I started asking doctors for a prescription. But they kept refusing me. And then in 1999, what had happened, like smoking hemp or smoking pot, it did help me. It helped me sleep and things like that. But in 1999, I decided to try to make the essential oil from the hemp plant because I needed a medication that was stronger. Now, I produced my first oil around 99, but to be honest with you, I was afraid to use it because I didn't know what it would do to me.
Right.
You know, this is a very potent substance.
Yep.
But by 2001, after about 5 years, the medical system finally cut me loose. You know, they told me they had tried everything that they knew, you know, that they had available, and nothing was helping me, so they told me I was on my own. So I went home, and I started ingesting the essential oil from the hemp plant as my only medication. Well, in a short time, my thinking processes cleared up, my arthritis in my knees went away, it controlled my blood pressure. It was doing nothing but good for me. And then in late 2002, I went back to my doctor's office because I had these three areas, one close to my eye on the side of my nose, and one on my cheek and one on my chest, and I suspected strongly that they were skin cancer. I'd had these lesions for quite a few years, and they wouldn't heal.
Mm-hmm.
So the doctor, he looked at, especially the one close to my eye, he was very concerned about that, so they sent me in to have that removed first. And then I was to go in and have the other two areas removed at a later date. So I went into the hospital, and they did the operation. And I was about a week later, I guess, I was home, and I was examining the area where they had operated on me. And, of course, it was infected, and a lot of people that have operations in the Amherst Hospital end up with infection. It's not an unusual thing.
Right.
And it was about that time that report I'd heard from the 1970s popped back into my mind. And I already had the essential oil right there, and I knew it was full of oil, or full of THC. So I thought, you know, why not try it on the cancer? Put it directly right onto the skin cancer and put a bandage on and see what happens. Well, I have to admit, I almost didn't do this. But, you know, I've always been a bit of a doting Thomas anyway, so I decided to give it a try. And so I did the two other areas, the one on my cheek and the one on my chest. And 4 days later, I didn't feel a thing after I put the oil on there. But about 4 days later, when I took the bandages off, the skin cancers were totally gone. They were cured. You know, it was just pink skin there. So I started telling my friends and people I knew well about this. And, of course, everybody laughed at me. You know, like, yeah, right, Rick, you know, marijuana cures cancer. Well, I got bad news for them. It does. But, I mean, even, you know, with everybody criticizing me, I started to doubt myself. And then about 7 weeks later, the one that they had surgically removed, it returned. So I watched it develop, and then I treated it with the oil. And 4 days later, I took the bandages off, just pink skin, completely healed. So I went down to my doctor's office because I knew they had taken a pathology report when they did the operation. And sure enough, the pathology report stated that I had basal cell carcinoma,
mm-hmm.
you know, skin cancer.
Yep.
So I told the doctor's receptionist, who happened to be his wife, that I would like to come back in the evening and discuss something I had been working on with the doctor. And she kind of looked at me funny, and she said, well, what's this about? And I told her what had happened. I said, you know, I cured all three of my skin cancers using hemp oil. And as soon as I said those words, the woman literally went ballistic. I mean, I was standing in my doctor's waiting room with four or five other patients, I guess it was.
Yeah.
And this woman was almost screaming at me. You know, the doctor will not go there. The doctor will not prescribe this. So believe me, it was a very strange experience. So I left the doctor's office, and I don't know, it was similar to being in the Twilight Zone. I couldn't figure this out. I mean, if I was a doctor and one of my patients came in and told me that he had cured his cancer, I would want to know how he did it. But they wanted nothing to do with me.
Yep.
So I went out and I started supplying the oil to other people I knew, friends and family, that were having, you know, problems with skin conditions, skin cancer, burns, you know, psoriasis, that type of thing. And the oil just worked one miracle after another. And so in 2003, I started contacting everyone. I went to Dr. Suzuki first, and I thought that, you know, he would bring this information forward because I knew that you know, most people wouldn't listen to me because I'm not a doctor, I don't have a PhD and all of this, so I thought Dr. Suzuki would be the perfect person. But they expressed no interest whatsoever. And then I went to all the different political parties in Canada. I went to the Minister of Health. We went to the Canadian Cancer Society. We even took this to the United Nations. Nobody would lift a finger. But still, the people kept coming, you know, because this medicine was building a reputation, so more and more kept coming to me. So I just kept supplying the oil, and I was supplying it for nothing at the time, and I just kept supplying the oil, and it just worked one miracle after another. Then in 2005, I was rated by the RCMP, and I mean, I've been always very upfront about what I was doing. I hid nothing. And matter of fact, I sent the RCMP a videotape that I had recorded in 2005, in April 2005, and it showed patients and everything right on it, you know, that had used the oil. And I asked the RCMP for what they confiscated so I could produce more medicine. But instead of allowing me to have the material I needed, they came and raided me and took what I had. And that was in 2005, I had 1,620 hemp plants in my backyard. So they took them all. And then in 2006, I put another 1,100 clones in my backyard, and they came again. This time they said they were with the marijuana eradication program. But they took all the hemp I had to work with again. So what happened is, in the end, I had to start buying the material I needed, you know, from local growers. And luckily for me, in Canada, an awful lot of the growers there, they grow the heavy sedative indica strains. And that's what I use for the medicine. So I didn't have too much problem, you know, getting the material required. So, I mean, from the raid in 2005, I was charged with, possession, cultivation, and trafficking, which I thought was ridiculous because, I mean, I was growing these plants, making the medicine, and giving it away.
Yeah.
I wasn't making any money. But they took me through their court system. And, I mean, I went through a charter challenge in Canada at first, you know, because our charter of rights states right in it that we have the right to life. But apparently in Canada, you don't have the right to life. In reality, you do not have the right to life because they won't allow you to use man's oldest known and safest medication to treat yourself. And I found the whole situation to be just, horrific. It was all these people dying and suffering. But yet the authorities wouldn't do anything. So
yeah.
I then went on to a Supreme Court case in Nova Scotia. And what happened, I mean, I had 10 patients and 6 doctors ready to testify. They wouldn't let them on the stand. They wouldn't let me introduce any scientific evidence whatsoever, and I had a box full of it. So in the end, it all came down to me. I was the only one that was allowed to testify on my own behalf. So after I was done, I felt sure that we had won the case. And so the jury was excused, and 3 hours later, we got word that they had reached a verdict. So I came back to the courthouse. But strangely, the Crown prosecutor was missing. And so I sat there, and eventually he came into the courtroom, and then about 2 or 3 minutes later, the jury entered. Well, then I stood up, and then they came right out with it, you know, guilty, guilty, guilty. And I couldn't believe this. You know, I was thinking, like, guilty of what? Healing? You know, is there a law against that? You know, healing and saving lives? Because by that time, I was treating people with terminal cancer and everything else. And this medicine was just turning people around like you wouldn't believe,
mm-hmm.
working one miracle after another. But they found me guilty. And then the very next day, a lady that was in the audience, she contacted me and told me that she had seen the Crown prosecutor leaving the jury room just minutes before the jury came in with my verdict. So the Crown prosecutor tampered with my jury. And we let the judge know this. We told him what had happened. About 2 weeks later, they called us up. I thought we were going to a meeting at the courthouse. And when I walked in, of course, Judge Cascione, he was on the bench. And the two prosecutors, Monica McQueen and Doug Shatford, they were also present. And they had some pasty-faced lawyer from Halifax representing them. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And Judge Cascione looked at Margaret Dwyer, that was the lady that had witnessed all this,
mm-hmm.
told her right there, he said, if we find anything you were saying to be untrue, you could be facing 14 years in prison. Well, luckily for me, Margaret Dwyer is a rock. I mean, she told the judge point blank. She said, I'm just here to tell you what I witnessed. So she got on the stand, and they did everything they could to try to disprove her, but they couldn't. And finally, she was excused. And then, of course, it was my turn then, so I called Doug Shatford, the Crown Prosecutor, to the stand. And I asked him, I said, do you use him? And he got all red in the face, and, you know, he started to stammer. And so then the judge jumped right in and took up for him. He said, you know, Mr. Simpson, that line of questioning will not be tolerated. You know, and I said, well, they asked Margaret Dwyer these questions. Why can't I ask the Crown Prosecutor the same?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you couldn't get a logical answer out of any of them. So, anyway, they, you know, like, they just made the whole thing sound like it was some kind of a joke. They, you know, the judge, at the end of it, the judge said that he thought that this was just something that Mrs. Dwyer and myself had cooked up to derail my sentencing, which was just totally unbelievable. So then, my sentencing was scheduled for early February 2008. And about 2 weeks before the sentencing, we brought out the documentary Run from the Cure. A young man in Amherst, a very talented young man named Christian Moret, he produced the documentary, and we released it about 2 weeks before I was sentenced. So I think that made the system a little uncomfortable because, I mean, it wouldn't look too good to put a man in jail for curing cancer. So anyway, when I went in for the sentencing, I mean, the judge stated right there, he said, you know, under different circumstances, I would be winning awards for the work I had done. But you don't win awards in a courtroom. And then he stated that in his 34 years in the legal system, he had never seen a case like mine. He said there was no criminal intent.
Yeah.
And then, even though he would not allow the patients to testify, and also he wouldn't allow the scientific evidence to be introduced, he came right out and stated. He said, the scientific evidence does exist to back up everything I'm saying, and I have all these patients or ex-patients that, you know, back my position. So I was facing 12 years in jail. But what they did, all the judge gave me was a $2,000 fine and a gun restriction.
Okay.
No guns involved in any of the raids that the RCMP performed on my property.
Yeah.
But if you are charged with trafficking and found guilty, that comes with an automatic gun restriction in Canada for some unknown reason.
All right.
So after my sentencing, I was very disillusioned. I was looking to leave Canada. And then one day my son, we were talking about moving to South America. And then my son, he started laughing at me one day. And I said, what's so funny? And he looked at me and he said, Dad, he said, I know you. And he said, you can't walk away from this. You know, he said, you're going to stay here and you're going to prove to these fools, you know, the truth about this matter. So anyway, the people kept coming, and I mean, I was really tired and disillusioned by that point, but the patients just kept coming. You know, I mean, in total, I think I treated somewhere in around 5,000 people.
Oh, boy. That's a lot of people.
So there was people coming steadily to my door.
Yeah. And they heard this by word of mouth, basically, from previous people you've dealt and treated, correct?
Well, word of mouth, and then in around 2005, we put up a website called phoenixtears.ca.
Yeah.
We told everyone how they can produce their own medicine and how to ingest it properly. So, you know, we were really starting to get a lot of attention, and on top of that, with Run from the Cure out there, that was creating quite a stir, too. So after I was sentenced, basically the system left me alone for almost 2 years. And then in 1999, in November, well, in October of 99, I went to the Czech Republic and did a speaking tour with Dr. Lemir Hanush, one of the top experts in this field. And it was a very successful tour. And then I returned to Canada for just 3 weeks. And then on November 20th, I had to fly back to Amsterdam to attend the Cannabis Cup. So while I was in Amsterdam, the day before they made me Freedom Fighter of the Year, I received word from my son in Canada that I had been raided again. The police had come there while I was in Europe, and they were saying that they found 70 pounds of pot in my home, they found restricted weapons and booby traps, which was nothing but nonsense. I mean, my home was robbed in 2003 while I was away on a trip, and it was robbed again in 2008 when I was, well, actually while I was in court. So, I mean, would I leave my home in Canada and come to Europe and leave 70 pounds of pot sitting in it? I mean, that's not even rational. But this is what they were trying to do, and I realized they were simply trying to frame me. And the more I thought about it, I figured that the Canadian government were just trying to keep me from returning home, because I had so much support, you know, at that time, and it was building every day. So I think they thought if they could just keep me in Europe, you know, and away from all this, that, you know, it would just fade away. But I stayed in Europe, and I continued the fight from over here. And I've done dozens of seminars in Europe. And over the last 3 years, I've traveled to, something like 18, 19 different countries. I've never had any trouble at all from any police forces or anybody during all these travels. But, you know, I just kept spreading the word. And then during that time period, I also sat down, you know, and wrote the book, you know, Phoenix Tears, The Rick Simpson Story. And presently, that's available on our website at phoenixtears.ca. It's available as an e-book. And it's pretty brutal, but it's all the truth.
Well, that's great. It's a reference where people can find out more about this, of course. And again, as I said, Rick, you know, thank you for sharing the backstory of that, because I think it's important to kind of set that preface. Now, of course, carry on and continue here if there's more to the story and if you kind of want to wrap that up for us.
Well, last May, the Canadian legal system withdrew the charges that they were going to lay against me. And then in June, early June, Tommy Chong went on CNN and told the whole world that he was going to use the RSO, or the Rick Simpson oil, to treat his prostate cancer instead of going through radiation and chemo and all that nonsense.
Yep.
But I was very concerned about Tommy Chong, because I heard he was taking some type of full plant extract, and he wasn't following the dosage instructions or anything else. So, you know, there's nothing really I could do about it, but we let Tommy know, we contacted him and let him know that, you know, that he had to have the right oil. Unfortunately, it seems that he didn't listen, because from what I understand, he recently announced that he was totally unsuccessful. It helped him in many other ways, but it didn't cure his prostate cancer.
And he was where, you said, now to announce this?
He was on CNN.
Okay, so are we talking about, I don't want to do this unnecessarily, but are we talking about another plan to discredit this type of information and the findings here, maybe?
Well, no. What he did, you know, someone manufactured a full plant extract, and that's not the same thing as I do. I produce the oil right from the very best heavily sedative buds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what makes the medicine. No, but there are people out there that are using the wrong solvents, and they're using the leaves and everything else from the plant, and that makes a much weaker form of hemp medicine. So I had hoped that Tommy would actually get on the right oil, but instead he chose not to, and of course it didn't prove to have the benefits that it should have.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's not your fault at the end of the day, though, right? This is.
No, that was Tommy Chong's fault.
Right.
And, I mean, the bottom line is, I've treated hundreds of people that had prostate cancer. Every one of them. Now, some of these people had prostate cancer that had mastized to other parts of their bodies. Now, every one of these people that listened to my advice and followed my instructions, every one of those people survived. So I knew that the problem, you know, was with Tommy Chong. It wasn't with the medicine. So then, right after that, I returned. I was in Canada for 6 weeks. I went back to Canada around the end of June, and I stayed till mid-August, and then I returned to Slovenia to speak at the World Hemp Congress. And unfortunately, they put a very big price tag on the entrance at the World Hemp Congress, and not many people attended, but they did live stream the event anyway on the internet. Then right after the Congress, I came back to Croatia, because I had done a seminar here in Opatija last year. And when I came back, I have to do another seminar on the 13th in Opatija, and then on the 21st, we're going to do one in Zagreb. And, you know, people's eyes are beginning to open about this. And we do have, you know, like the Internet is just alive with it now. I mean, if you go up on the Internet and punch in my name, or if you punch in all these different people like Dave Triplett, Dennis Hill, Shauna Banda, there's so many of them out there now that are, you know, they put up videos and video clips that, you know, believe me, these clips are vivid. And, you know, they show the oil working. So to me, it's just a matter of time before this oil comes out, you know, and will be available for everyone. But what's happening right now, I mean, our governments are controlled by big money. And the big money also own the pharmaceutical companies. And they don't want this medicine to come out. So they're doing everything within their power to prevent it. But like every time I do an interview, I openly challenge the medical system. You know, come take me on before a live audience. Or better yet, even on national television. You know, let's see, you know, whose statements they believe about what is medicine and what is not. Because the bottom line is, I mean, when you look at the chemicals and poisons they use today, how dare they call that medicine? You know, our fathers, my own father always told me, he said, Ricky, the cure for everything is in nature. And he was right. You know, all they're doing is selling us all these chemicals and poisons to make a big profit. And that's got to come to an end. You know, these big money families like the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, you know, they literally rule this planet. You know, as I understand it, the Rothschilds themselves are in control of over half the money on this planet. Now, we're talking about one family in control of all the money. And, I mean, this has to come to an end. So, I mean, myself and many others now, you know, worldwide are speaking out about this, and we're making a lot of noise, you know, from several different angles. You know, we're coming at the system. But this is one of the probably the most important angle, because this affects the health and well-being of every man, woman, and child on this planet. And, you know, the curative effects of this medication are just beyond belief. I mean, it detoxifies you. It brings you back to a healthy weight. It cures chronic pain, arthritis. We have AIDS patients using it successfully. You know, all different types of cancers. I don't know the disease that this medication does not work for. And since it's man's oldest known and safest medication, and no one has ever died, you know, from its medicinal use, you know, how dare they, you know, continue to prohibit its use? So we're continuing the fight, and I think very soon now the walls are going to come down, because this is a truth that you can no longer run away from. And when you look at the events that are happening, like Fukushima, I mean, that radiation is traveling all over this planet, and it's going to affect the health and well-being of all living creatures. And, you know, that what I've seen, you know, with the oil's use, I've had a lot of people came to me who had radiation, you know, and they were burnt right from the chest right through to the back. Matter of fact, that their chest looked like red leather from all the radiation. In 3 months, after they take the treatment, 3 months later, they take their shirts off, you'd never know they had radiation. So this undoes radiation damage, and it keeps your body detoxified. So, actually, it can provide us with protection from what's happened in Fukushima. And this is a very strong reason why everyone should be using small amounts of this oil every day to maintain good health.
Excellent. Now, there are many components of this that I want to discuss further in detail. You've done a great job of outlining the major area of where we need to go and should go, I think, in this continuance of our interview here, the time together here, Rick. Why don't we talk a little bit more about the... I guess the cancer industry, this is a big money machine as well. And obviously, as you rightly said, there is a stigma here. Society and the medical establishment, big pharma, are basically not interested in alternatives right now, if they ever have been and if they ever will be for many different reasons. I think one point is what you just brought up here with the money bit as well, the aspect that a lot of people are put through the machinery of the available cures that they have. I don't know about the success rate. That's been debated back and forth of chemotherapy and all that, but it's not fairly high as far as I understand it, and very little chance of coming out the other end, managing and getting through. But what more can you say about why there is such a resistance? Is it money at the root of this, or is there something else, another reason, do you think?
Well, it's both money and power. You see, I mean, back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, there was two main fields of medicine. There was the allopathic approach to medicine, you know, medicine from chemicals and poison, and there was the empiric form of medicine, medicine from plants. But around 1906, 1907, John D. Rockefeller, he started with these medical foundations. And they took what they did, they took over all the medical schools. And after that, all they taught doctors was allopathic medicine, medicine from chemicals. You know, they pushed empiric medicine right out the back door because there's no money in it.
Yeah.
And, of course, Mr. Rockefeller's friends, they're the ones that own the chemical companies and all of this. And it amazes me that they were ever able to convince the public that these horrible substances can be used as a medicine. I mean, it's insane. I mean, if you walk up to a 10-year-old child and you ask them, you know, is poison and radiation good for you? Instantly, that child would say no. But wait 20 years and let that child become a doctor, then ask them the same question. And what they'll do, they'll tell you, well, you know, we have to use these substances and treatments, you know, to treat you effectively. You know, what a bunch of nonsense. I mean, when a 10-year-old child knows more than a doctor about healing, I think our medical system is in trouble.
Yep.
This has been going on for decades and decades now. And, I mean, we've been fighting, you know, right now I'm the leader of the hemp movement since Jack Herer passed away. You know, and the hemp movement, they've been running around blowing smoke in people's faces for 40 years now and getting nowhere. I mean, we have to show people the real medicinal use of this plant, and that's the use of this oil. You know, show the oil and show what this does for the patient.
Mm.
That's what the public needs to be aware of. But there's so much propaganda, you know, I mean, the big money, they own all the media, the news
sure.
media, it's all controlled.
Yep.
The only place you can find the truth about anything is on the Internet.
I agree.
So
concur.
This is the reason it's all going on, and it is all about the money and the power, but I honestly think to these mega-rich people that, you know, the money, it's like a drug, you know, that they really have become badly addicted to. But when hemp comes on the scene, all addictions can be broken. And one of these days, very soon, we're going to break it.
All right, sounds good. Now, let's talk about some of the scientific evidence for those who, let's say that they don't know about this yet, or they might just have an inherent skeptical approach to this, and I don't think many do that listen to this program, but in any regard, let's talk about it because it's a good to cover that. So tell us what it does and how this works, Rick.
Well, scientific evidence is all out there. You know, it's been out there for many decades, actually. I mean, the scientists and the researchers have known this for a very long time, since at least the 1970s. They knew that this cured cancer, but there was no money down that road, so they refused to go there. You know, and of course, researchers—they're always looking for funding grants and all of this. And so, I mean, the real truth about this whole subject has never been told to the public until I exposed it. And now this is spreading so rapidly now worldwide that there's no holding it back. You know, we're going to have our medicine, and there's no way that they can put a stop to it. You know, I mean, why do we have laws in place against a plant that has never harmed anyone? I mean, this doesn't make any sense, you know. And then when you look at the United Nations and their UN, the UN regulations they put in place in 1961, the Single Treaty Convention, which prohibits, you know, member countries from allowing their citizens the use of hemp. You know, this is all done, it's all orchestrated by the big money. So we can't get the hemp plant. You know, they told us it was marijuana and it was deadly and dangerous. Well, how many people do you know that died from pot? I don't know any. You know, and it's not addictive, it's not dangerous, it's medicine, and they know it. But they're going to try to continue on with this nonsense for as long as they possibly can, because every day they can get away with it is a day that they will make more money. And that's all they care about. Money, power, and control.
So there's a lot of tremendous beneficial aspects to the hemp plant, from fibers being used in to make clothes, to paper. There's even some companies that used it for, it was a while ago now, I think, but they actually used the hemp fiber to have it as a cover on a car, right, instead of metal.
Yeah.
A lot of different aspects to the plant that it's kind of very interesting, and it's been suppressed for many different reasons, I believe, as well, Rick.
Well, practically everything we use in our day-to-day lives can be produced from hemp, you know, and just the energy aspect of this plant itself, when you look at it, you know, I mean, I've seen the process myself on the Internet, and, you know, it showed like 1 acre of hemp. Well, 1 acre is only about 65 meters by 65 meters. We're not talking about a very big piece of land, but one acre of hemp can produce as much as 1,800 gallons of ethanol per acre. Now, 1,800 gallons is enough to keep your car running, to heat your house, and you still have a few hundred gallons left over every year. And it would make us self-sufficient again. And that's exactly what the system doesn't want. The other amazing aspect of this plant is, you know, the food supply that we could have if we would just simply grow this plant. You know, at present, the honeybee is, they're talking about the honeybee going extinct because of all this microwave radiation that we're using these days. It's giving these small creatures infections, and they're dying at a very rapid pace. Now, if we lose the honeybees, that's going to have a devastating effect on farming. And the one beauty of the hemp, or one of the main beauties of the hemp plant, is it doesn't need the honeybee. You know, there's male and female hemp plants, and as long as you have a bit of wind, the males will pollinate the females. And that would ensure that we have a stable food supply basically forever. And as for medicine, well, I've already explained quite a bit of that. But the simple facts are here that this oil that contains all these cannabinoids, when they enter our bodies, they are absorbed by our endocannabinoid system through the CB1 and CB2 receptors. Now, the endocannabinoid system of our bodies regulates practically everything in our bodies, including our immune systems. So when you see what this medicine can do, it really is mind-boggling, you know, because it works for, like I said, all different types of conditions. What they say with cancer, they say that, you know, like our bodies produce a natural cannabinoids called amandamides, but when our immune systems become compromised and that type of thing, you know, and we use antibiotics and whatnot, it compromises our immune system, and it leaves the door open for cancer to develop. And if the cancer starts to get well developed, then our immune systems can't overcome it. But amazingly, these cannabinoids, if they're decarboxylated, they fit the cannabinoid receptors. And what happens when they go into these receptors, they cause a buildup of a fat molecule called ceramide. And when the ceramide comes in contact with cancer cells, it kills them.
Mm-hmm.
But it does no harm to healthy cells. There is no harm factor with this medicine. The worst that could happen is you might get high. And horrible experience that is.
An awful side effect. That's right. So how do you, obviously, as you detailed already, you take this in a different way depending on what the ailment is, depending on what you need to remedy. But detail this a little bit more for us and how much you would recommend people. I know a lot of this is on the website, but we want to introduce people to this, of course, Rick, so we get an idea of what we're talking about.
Sure, brother. Well, the medicine can be used in about four different ways. I mean, you can use it topically for skin conditions, psoriasis, skin cancer, that type of thing. You can use it in vaporized form to help with lung conditions. And you can ingest it, or you can use it in suppository form. And it works well in all these forms. But like with somebody comes to me with lung cancer, what I do, I tell them to vaporize the oil and to ingest it also. That way, because the raw cannabinoids are being breathed right in on the cancer. And then through the bloodstream, the cannabinoids are coming the other way. So it can have like a double whammy effect on the cancer. And I like working with lung cancer patients and people with leukemia and things like that, because the effects of this medication, they show themselves very rapidly. You know, somebody with lung cancer, in no time, you can see that they're walking further, they're breathing easier. You can see the improvements every day. So a lot of these diseases, it's quite easy to tell that the medicine is working. But they have everybody brainwashed so badly. I mean, people keep running back to their doctors to get a CAT scan. Well, a CAT scan is just another massive dose of radiation.
Yeah.
You know, that none of these scans or these tests that the doctors do, none of them make any sense. All they're doing is more harm. But, you know, but the ordinary person doesn't know these things, because we put our trust in these so-called medical experts. And really about the only thing that I could consider them as being experts in is killing us. So, you know, if you use the oil properly, there's no danger. And what I tell people to do, basically, if you have a terminal cancer and you've had no radiation or chemotherapy, what you do is ingest 60 grams of this high-grade oil and over about a three-month period. And in the vast majority, and I mean the vast majority, like 99% of them, the cancer's gone. But for those who've been badly damaged with radiation and chemotherapy, then I would suggest that they take 120 to 180 grams of this oil as quickly as possible, because you have to undo all of this damage that the radiation and chemo did. And this damage lasts, believe me. And I'd like to make it clear, too, that this is not hemp seed oil I'm talking about. I mean, you can go into your local health food stores and you can buy what they call hemp oil.
Mm-hmm.
But it really isn't. If you turn the label around and read the back, it says cold-pressed hemp seed oil. So that's what they should have on the label, you know, on the front. But I've had some problems with that, and some of these people that supply hemp seed oil have been a bit mad with me because, you know, I call this hemp oil. But if you look at, you know, history, all through history, farmers grew this, and they called it hemp. So when I produce the essential oil from that plant, what else would you call it? It's hemp oil.
Mm. And this is from the other hemp seed oil, that's from industrial hemp that basically doesn't have any THC in it, is that correct?
Well, industrial hemp or otherwise, it doesn't make any difference. You can take the seeds from the strongest strain of marijuana on the planet, and you can't get high off it. Because there's just trace amounts of THC.
Mm,
see,
yep.
In Canada, anything with more than 10 parts per million THC is not allowed. But in Canada, you can freely buy seeds. You can order hemp seeds in Canada and purchase them, but you're not allowed to grow them. So,
yep.
You know, it's a very foolish situation that we're in here.
Indeed, and that's how they've set it up, I think. It's amazing when you think about it, though. It's a plant. I mean, Australia was in the process.
A harmless, God-given plant.
Yeah.
And who has the right to tell us that we're not allowed to use this? I mean, I'm all in favor of law and order, and if a substance is harmful, fine. Make it, you know, put laws against it. But how dare you put a law in place against this wonderful plant?
Alcohol, caffeine, there's a number of substances that are considered to be morally accepted just because it happens to be okayed in the law books, but these have detrimental effects on all of those who are taking it. So it has nothing to do, as you've made it clearly, you know, clear now, Rick, it has nothing to do with the effectiveness of them or the fact that if they're harmful to you, that's not the case here. That's not what they're looking for, basically.
Well, they're grasping at straws. I mean, they've told us for years, you know, it's the psychoactive effects of this plant that we're so afraid of. Well, if they're so afraid of psychoactive effects, what's the most psychoactive substance on the planet? Well, that would be the caffeine in your coffee, wouldn't it? Now, if that's the case, then why are they allowing everyone to drink coffee? You know, and believe me, some of these strong types of coffee, they can get you wired pretty quick.
Sure.
You know, I've had some of this European coffee, and it's kind of scary. But you're right. Alcohol, when you look at all the things that are legal, like alcohol, and when you look at all the things that are killing people today, I mean, over 80% of those who are dying on the street from drug overdoses are dying from pharmaceutical medications. And now, I mean crack cocaine, crystal meth, and
sure,
all the rest of that.
Yep.
Yes, I agree. It's horrible, and it should never be made legal. But, you know, like, they've lumped cannabis right in there, you know, with all these hard drugs. And I don't even like to see cannabis called a drug. As far as I'm concerned, cannabis is a medicine that can be used effectively, even recreationally. It's a medicine. It's not a drug. But, you know, the public perception, when we hear the word drug, we always think, you know, heroin or, you know, Oxycontin and all these substances that can harm and kill us. So I think the public, you know, perception of this plant has been badly skewered. And what I'm out to do is set them straight.
Very good. Now, so many aspects to this that we want to talk about, and maybe we can return a little bit more to how tetrahydrocannabinol works in the body, or what some of the benefits are, and why. Basically, what you detailed here is that it helps, like so many useful herbs and stuff like that does to your body, basically helps your immune system to get back into shape, and then the immune system takes care of business, right? Whatever ailment you happen to have.
It's an immune system booster.
Yeah.
But even externally, I mean, actually, the first time I made oil, I was on medications that the medical system had given me, and my thinking processes were not very good, believe me. And I wound up setting myself on fire. And I gave myself a severe burn. My right hand, about three-quarters of my right hand, literally melted.
Wow.
It was hanging.
Oops.
In gobs.
Mm-hmm.
And my girlfriend, she came down about 4 hours later. I was making oil at the time, and of course the solvent and the oils, you know, that had splashed all over my skin, and when it caught fire, well, it burnt right in. But about 4 hours after I burnt myself, my girlfriend, she came down, and she looked at it, and she just took a pair of scissors, and I know it sounds horrible, but you don't feel it, because the flesh is all dead. She cut off all the dead skin.
Ooh.
And then about, I guess it was about 4 or 5 days later, she said to me, she said, Rick, she said, you've got to go see a doctor about this. So I don't like doctors anyway, But I went in and I seen the doctor, and as soon as he looked at my hand, he looked at me and he said, "When did you do this?" And I said, "About 5 days ago." He said, "My God, man," he said, there's nothing I could do with that." He said, "You've got a third degree burn. You got third degree burns." So he wrapped a piece of gauze around my hand. He didn't put nothing on it. And he told me, he said, "I want you to come back in 7 days, and we're going to make arrangements so we can do skin grafts from your back and your ass and all of these different places." And so I just got up and said, "Okay." And 7 days later, I went back and seen him. Well, I was so screwed up with all these chemicals that I didn't even realize myself what was taking place. And when I went back into the doctor's office, I put my hand out, and his eyes got as big as two saucers. He couldn't believe what he was seeing. And he looked at me and he said, 7 days ago, he said, "You had third degree burns." He said, "Today, all that's there is pink skin. And even the hair follicles all grew back." You know, so if my hand can be repaired, you know, by using hemp oil, from what I've seen, there's no question it was more than repaired. It was completely healed.
Yeah.
And, I mean, why aren't we using this in burn units? When you look at somebody or a child that's gone through a house fire, that type of thing, I mean, what they're put through in the medical system is horrifying. They lay there for months and go through these these operations. They're subject to infections, all kinds of problems. But after I seen what it did with my hand, it truly makes me wonder, if you took a child that had bad facial burns and you applied this oil, could it regrow their face? I believe it could. And I think it's disgusting that these burn units are not using this substance to ease all of this suffering.
Yeah. Now, we're going to take a break here in a few minutes. We want to detail a bit more about how to get the book and the website and the film and everything else here. But why did you call it Phoenix Tears? Tell us a little bit about the name.
Well, that would be due to the author of the Harry Potter series. I was watching a Harry Potter movie years ago, and the big snake had come in and sunk its fangs into Harry, and of course our hero was dying, and then in flew a phoenix, and it shed the tears on the wound, and Harry was saved. And right at that moment, I said the words, "Phoenix tears." And certainly a few seconds later, Harry said the same thing. But I felt that the term actually suited, you know, these golden drops of oil that was healing everyone. So that's the reason I called it Phoenix Tears. But now most people just call it the Rick Simpson oil. It wasn't me that named it, by the way. It was the last leader of the hemp movement, Jack Hare, that started calling it the Rick Simpson oil, or today it's commonly referred to as the RSO. But I was a bit put out with Jack when he told me, you know, like when I heard him use the term, and I said, "Jack, this is hemp oil. Why are you attaching my name?" And he just said to me, he said, "Well, aren't you Rick Simpson?" So you couldn't argue with Jack Hare. He was a wonderful man, and I have nothing but respect for him. And I wish he was still around. He was the greatest leader the hemp movement ever had.
Now, so again, just to preface this, it's important that people obviously use their personal rational abilities, and when they run through this, that they obviously follow the details that you have on the website and everything, that to get it right and everything else. Is there a way people can contact you through the website if they have questions and such as well?
Oh yes, we've been answering questions. While I'm in Canada, I answered them by phone, but since I've been in Europe, we've been answering, oh God, seems like it must be tens of thousands of emails. I mean, we get hundreds every week with all these different questions.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, if people would just go on the website and read the information that's there, most of the questions that they ask are already answered.
Well, there you go. Exactly. Begin from right to left and from the top to the bottom, and things can be learned.
Well, we have such a number of people, coming to us, and we're so, it keeps us under a lot of stress, and plus I'm trying to do these seminars and then living out of a suitcase for the last 3 years and sleeping in strange beds, and you're kind of half exhausted most of the time.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
So it would be much easier on us if people would just simply read the information that's up there. And if they do have a pertinent question, we'd be happy to answer it.
All right, really good. Let's talk a little bit more then about the website, phoenixtears.ca. Do you have all the things we've mentioned so far available here then, the book? Can you check the film through the website as well, or how do people get that?
Well, the book is available right on the website as an e-book. And very shortly now, we'll be putting it out in hardcover. So it should be widely available. But, it takes money and time to accomplish all these things. And One of the main horror stories I've seen in this whole thing is, you know, I thought that there would be philanthropists and foundations that would come out and back, you know, what I'm doing.
Right, yeah.
Because, you know, there's no question that it works. But so far, no one has come forward to back this. And I find that horrifying. I mean, when you look at these people like Bill Gates that have more money than they know what to do with and pretend that they're trying to help the people on this planet, I mean, what better way could you help them than to provide a medicine that can heal them? So I'm truly disgusted with what I see. And as far as I'm concerned, all these foundations and societies and philanthropists, they're not out to help anyone but themselves.
Well, there we go. And he carries on with this eugenics vaccine program and, of course, believes it's the right thing to do, right? That's the good thing. It's based on good science. So that's what that causes, you know?
Well, exactly. I mean, yeah, Mr. Gates wants every man, woman, and child on this planet to take his vaccines. And then 10 minutes later, he's talking about depopulating the planet. I mean, who gave him that right? You know, I don't trust this man, and I don't trust any of these big money types. To me, they're really nothing more than psychopaths that are out to control us and make as much as they can, you know, while we're alive. They just keep, you know, that's what doctors do today. They keep dumping us full of pills, you know, for years and years and years, until finally the effects of these pills give us diseases like Alzheimer's, or they just outright kill us.
Well, you know, and
it's just a big racket.
And if you think about it, Rick, I think that's probably why someone hasn't come forward as well. If you think about it, I know that's more difficult than all that, and I'm sure it would be really helpful to have a lot of money behind you and everything else. But if you think about it, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a blessing, because if someone on these people got their hooks into you, so to speak, on a financial bit, that could actually cause more harm than good at the end.
Well, no one gets their hooks into me. I mean, I didn't bring this out so the pharmaceutical industry could fill their pockets, and I've made that fact known. And, you know, this was, to me, I just looked at this as a gift to mankind. You know, show them how to heal themselves, show them how to produce their own medicine. That's what I did. And I don't make any claims that, you know, like I found the cure for cancer. I did cure my own cancer, and I've cured the cancer of countless other people. But, it, you know, to me, they've known how to cure cancer for a very long time. The only claim that I can really make would be that I think I'm the first to actually go out and treat a great number of people and then make the results of those treatments known publicly. That's my claim to fame, if I have one. But it's not about me. You know, if you want a hero in all of this, look at the oil. That's the hero.
All right, really good. Now, we're going to take a short break here, Rick, and we'll return with more in a little bit. But again, on the website, phoenictears.ca, everything you need to know is right there on the website. Check out the book as well, Phoenix Tears, The Rick Simpson Story, and it's available right now as an ebook. But as Rick said, it will be released in a physical form book as well here in a little bit, and you can make orders through the website as well. All right, Rick, really interesting stuff. We have much more to discuss and talk about. Stay with us, and we'll be right back after this short break. right, my friends. That's that if you stay with us in the second hour. We are going to continue to talk more about Rick Simpson's story, his work, research, the oil, and how he's been trying to get the word out about this amazing plant. There are hundreds of different beneficial properties to cannabis or hemp. There's industrial hemp that can be grown for fibers to make textiles, paper, and even car hoods. It can also be used as fuel, of course, and it's an excellent substitute for plastics. The plant can even clean soil from toxins and radiation where it grows. This is called phytoremediation. This is truly a remarkable plant, and it's amazing how it has been suppressed. Today, when you talk about cannabis or hemp, most people, at least in this country, just associate it with hippies or potheads. It's very unfortunate. We're also going to talk more about the heavy indica strain, recommendations on dosage, how to take it, and finally ending on a positive versus negative outcome, how Rick sees things develop in the future. I hope you take this opportunity to sign up for a membership with us and continue to not only listen to this program, but also the 6 years of archived radio shows we have for you on the members' website, redeyesmembers.com. We're completely independent, driven by knowledge and the pursuit of authenticity. We also spare you from commercial interruptions. On our members' website, you can comment on the programs, join in on the discussion, subscribe to our RSS feeds, watch our TV episodes, webcasts, video interviews, films, and listen to our commentary and music as well. Next up on Red Eyes Radio, we have Richard Grove, Dean Clifford, Mike Cross, George Cavassalas, Nikki Rapana, Randy Powell, Sterling Allen, and also Scott Onscott with Dan Tatman and Kevin McMahon on a roundtable discussion on geomancy, architecture, and numerology. Later, we also have Kent Bain and Chris Milligan joining us to talk about 9/11 as a mass ritual. Thank you so much for listening, for staying with us, and for caring about these important subjects. We'll be right back with Rick Simpson, Hour 2.